Can you hear that Rocky Mountain water as it thunders coming down to wash you away? You can't hold back the rising tide, and you can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track. You can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track.
Has like all the controls of the flight stations are towards the back of the flight deck.
Yeah.
But then in the front, it's hard to see, but there's that little
couch
thing where they sit and make plans and stuff like that, and have a table that they get this portable computer later on, and have a table that they put ORAC on there. But like, yeah, the show was started in 1977.
Yeah, so I thought that would be a fun thing, because just be like in the descriptions, it's like the faux wood paneling down the main corridor. Why is this here? Well, I mean, it classes up the joint. Yeah, class.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever helps you sleep at night.
Oh, you have to have the avocado green replicator?
Yeah. It's like, why is the 3D food printer green?
Why aren't we recording this?
We are recording
this. Oh, okay. All right. Welcome to South Postcast, episode
417.
417. Like, I think we should just leave a lot of this in, because, like, you're talking about your gender expression and your idea for your 70s spaceship.
Yeah, and I just thought it was really funny, because I was like, yeah, that would be good, and it would make sense, because they basically got it from their eccentric dad, where he was on Explorer, who just, you know, got sick and died, and left the ship to his son and stepdaughter, and they hadn't seen him in a while, because you live on these ships.
Right,
it's like his...
Hi, dog!
It would be almost like someone's Winnebago.
When
they get it.
It's like Spaceballs.
It's a little bit like Spaceballs, though. It's this, you know, sleek 168-meter-long starship.
Yeah.
That the exterior is nice, if not a little banged up, but the interior is definitely like a 1970s Winnebago in terms of, like, the faux wood accents, the brown shag carpeting. For some inexplicable reason, there is a conversation pit in the observation deck room.
And the manual for the food machine is that old 70s cookbook.
Yeah.
So the food machine can replicate, like, a lot of Jell-O molds and stuff like that. Like, gray pate on a cherry Jell-O mold or weird shit like that.
Yeah. So I've been having fun, like, doing things like that with my story ideas. It's like, okay, one of my mutuals on Twitter was, I want to be the reverse J.K. Rowling, where, like, the story is nothing but sex scenes, and then, like, on Twitter, I'm randomly throwing out details of the adventures that are never shown.
Like, you know, this lesbian couple could do magic, and you never mention it in the stories.
It's like, oh yeah, and then this one time, these two met, and this character's ex-husband tried to kill him tried to kill her for reasons, and there was this big long adventure trying to find out who was at fault and what the deal was.
And the toilet is a disused cargo hold that you just go in and you just shit on the floor, and then, like, once a week, depressurize the bay and all the shit gets sucked out into space. Blown out into space. For the whole shitting in where you stand in magic and get away thing.
Yeah. So that's been kind of my fun brain activities. Like, these two characters, and this is how they would meet, and all these, like, story details around, like, basically furry, Elite Dangerous fanfic with a lot of fucking, but also space adventure.
Right.
That I'm coming up with. And
this sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's fun to do, because I really, like, dig the least base setting of the universe. And, like, the whole conceit of you're alone in these giant spaceships doesn't make any sense, so I've, like, came up with the idea. My ship would have a crew. Now I'm going to have to characterize these crew. Now I want to get art of these characters of this crew. Oh no, these are now my characters. I've got a stable of characters now. Okay. So now I want to get art of, like, Alex and Z, who's this tired possum mechanic, and his little kobold girlfriend.
His what girlfriend?
Kobold. She's like a little lizard girl.
Oh, okay, cool.
She's like two-thirds his height, and like background story, basically she's small and can climb into the engine compartment areas that he can't. Uh-huh. So like they hook up initially because reasons, but then they stick together because they can work the job together.
It's a wee bit like Scotty and his little alien engineer assistant in the new Star Trek movies.
Yeah.
Except with more fucking.
Well, you never know what's going on with Scotty.
I wonder if anyone has written slash fic of Scotty and the little alien dude.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have.
So this is episode 417, Florida Man Strikes Back, because we have some lighter topics to start with, and there's this fun thing that's been going around.
Right.
That, like, on this day with Florida Man,
you Google Florida Man and your birthday.
Yes.
And you take the top headline that shows up. And, like, I had one that was, like, semi-funny in the headline, but the Google image result that popped up at the top was way funnier. It was Florida Man Vapes Semen.
Nice. Mine was creepy. It was Florida Man Kills Grandmother in Nudist Colony, Drives Around with Her Body for 5 hours. That was like, there was a couple where it's like,
wow,
that were just lame, but that one stood out.
Yeah.
I didn't tweet that because I was going to talk about it tonight.
Okay.
Gotta save that content, right?
Right.
So Florida Man,
mm-hmm.
You know, the only reason we know about all this stuff is that there are sunshine laws.
Yes.
They have to basically have to make everything public record, all the weird arrests and stuff. So that's why the whole Florida Man thing is a thing.
Because every weird thing that happens in Florida is public record, and the local news stations air it. And then these headlines hit, and everyone thinks, wow, Florida's crazy. You don't hear about this shit happening in other 49 states. And it's like, every state probably has some really weird, crazy shit.
Yeah.
You just don't necessarily find out about it.
That was the most fun one that I saw. The other ones were just, well, fun in the offbeat, weird Florida Man stereotype, and not the, yeah, haha, he murdered his grandma at a nudist colony. That's just weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Do that, kids.
The vaping semen thing is, like, that seems fairly innocuous, unless it was, like, I don't know, he force-built somebody or something. I didn't read the article. All I needed was the headline.
So, how do you feel about video games?
I really like Night in the Woods. And, I had a Nintendo when I was, like, in my 20s.
Are you eager to join the nightmare future where Google has even more control over what you can play and when you can play it?
God.
And when they decide to shut it down in 2 years, you're just shit out of luck because you don't actually own your stuff?
So, this is interesting because, like, I saw the headline that Google is unveiling some kind of system to do with video games. And I don't know if it's, like, strictly an online thing. Or are they making a console? What are they doing?
Okay, so this has been something that's been rumored for a while and very of interest to people that play video games, like me, what it would even be. So it's called Google Stadia. And everybody makes all like, oh, it's Google Stevia, zero calories, lol. I made that joke. Other people did too. What it is a streaming game thing where you're not actually playing the game on local hardware. You're playing it on Google's hardware at their data center, and they're just shipping the video back to you.
It's like YouTube, but you're playing a video game.
Yeah, exactly. They have like a controller that they've made that you can use, which they actually demonstrated it, which was actually really neat. And they showed
the one funny thing that I saw was the guy was doing the presentation and he has a gigantic mock-up of the controller behind him. And I saw someone at screen cap to the comment, I don't know, guys, this controller looks kind of big. Because it was like the width of my house and about as tall.
They're going bigger than the original Xbox. So Google Stadia is supposed to be really eminently portable. You can pick up and play your game anywhere. You can play it on phones. You can play it on Chromebooks. You can play it on your TV.
So could you Bluetooth connect the controller to your phone and then set your phone up and play it like with the controller?
As long as it has a net connection strong enough to get the video feed, yes.
Right.
Their controller is interesting because it connects via the internet directly to Google. So it's not like paired to the device. It's paired to this server, which then feeds the video back to whatever you're accessing it from.
Oh, so you're not Bluetoothing it to your phone.
You can Bluetooth it to your phone, but if you want to literally carry the controller around the house and connect it, which was part of the demonstration they showed. Mm-hmm. So they showed a guy playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is the most recent one, like on a Chromebook, which a Chromebook is a tablet that's severely underpowered. It has no hardware accelerator, but they were playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey and streaming video at 1080p.
Wow.
Then they paused it, went a foot to the right, and the guy picked up from where he was playing on his phone that had a controller attached. And he played that for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Then he stepped right to a proper desktop computer and then to a tablet,
mm-hmm.
which had the controller paired.
Mm-hmm.
But then he unplugged the controller and walked over to a large television and resumed it there. So basically they showed it moving, him moving where he was playing at five different spots, just like right after the other, mm-hmm. with no loss of position, essentially.
So the online service that you're paying for because the controller has its own connection to the internet, is Google charging like a monthly fee for access to that?
Probably. They have been very light on the details right now.
Right.
Basically, they're announcing, hey, we want to do this thing. We're going to do this thing. And they've paired up with some companies. Like, they've instated Jade Raymond, who has a very long history in the games industry, as their head of development for this. And on its face, it's neat. But it does have a lot of question marks and a lot of limitations, too.
Mm.
If you live in a city and have good internet, cool. You're going to be able to do this. But if you live anywhere outside of the cities and you're limited to satellite net or whatever, you're basically shit out of luck.
Right.
They're only putting it in, like, U.S., Canada, Western Europe to start, because other countries don't necessarily have the high-speed infrastructure.
Really surprised they're not. They don't have Japan in the initial
It's coming, launch. But mm-hmm. it's just one of those things. They're rolling it out smaller to start. Right. The other thing, too, is that they don't really have any details about how the games are going to be monetized. Are you, like, buying a license to the game so you can play it anywhere? Are you paying, like, a monthly fee to have a Netflix of games, essentially?
Mm-hmm.
How does the money work for the developers of these titles? Is this going to be limited to AAA only, or are indie devs going to try to eke out some pennies from this?
Yeah, because, like, on the downside, I'm kind of thinking, like, Spotify, where, like, the songwriters get fractions of pennies for every play. So, like, if it's, like, a monthly fee thing and an indie dev can be on there, how much are they getting per play on their game, you know?
Yeah, and the other thing is that you don't have any sort of physical media. When Google shuts down a thing, and Google loves to shut down things, like Google Buzz, Google Plus,
Google Wave.
Google everything, really.
Yeah.
They've stopped supporting their several types of hardware. Google does a thing, decides, eh, and stops it. If you have invested time and effort in these games, and then they shut it off, you're out of luck.
Right.
The other thing that I've also seen people talk about is that it really is, they're aiming it to also be like the future of YouTube, because on the controller, they have a couple things where it's like hit a button
and stream right to YouTube.
Stream right to YouTube and then upload the video to YouTube.
So they're also looking to try and take some of the market from sites like Twitch and others. Yeah.
And there is a Google Home Assistant built into the controller. It has a microphone, mm-hmm. so you can record all your heated gaming moments. Or you can just say, hey, Google, I'm stuck here. And they're claiming that it will be able to point you to a YouTube video that covers the game you were looking at and try to find you a tutorial for that section you're having difficulty with.
Oh.
So they're trying to drive people to YouTube further to engage right. with the gaming side of things. So there's a lot of different angles, because they're like, oh, we're trying to use with YouTube creators. And I'm just like, oh, great. We're going to have a bunch of YouTube Nazis. But if it's going to be video games specific, okay, but there's so many questions. Like, you can see, like, yeah. okay, these are neat ideas, but where are these going to go wrong?
From a purely business perspective, it's like, it makes sense. They're diversifying their income streams by moving into an area that they're not really in yet, and that makes sense. But there's the worry that, like, Google is this massive company that, so far, they've had to pay the European Union $9.7 billion over the last 4 years because they keep getting fined. the EU is a lot more proactive on our tech companies' monopolies. And I guess they have laws that make it a lot easier to be like, no, this is unfair to competitors, and is trying to trust bust them, basically. Like, one of the things was, like, on their phones, like, Chrome is obviously pre-installed as the default browser. I think they're trying to force them to put, like, other browsers on there.
Huh, okay. You know,
remember back in the day
with, like, Windows
when Microsoft, Microsoft got sued because IE had an unfair advantage, and back then their big competitor was Netscape Navigator.
Remember that?
And basically it forced them to have Netscape already on Windows so that you would have your choice of whether to use IE or Netscape right out of the box. This was around, I think, the Windows ME kind of era.
Ooh, I remember that. It sucked.
Yeah. Not the Netscape thing. Windows ME sucked.
Yeah, Windows ME sucked. It'll be interesting to see how this rollout goes. They ran a stress test of it earlier this year with Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I didn't mess with it because I'm like, I'm giving Google even more of my data. Eh. Even if they did give you a free copy of the game after the fact, I was like, I don't really care that much about Assassin's Creed Odyssey. It'll probably end up in a Humble Monthly at some point in the future, and I might touch it then. But it's interesting on its face, but we are kind of going towards a simultaneous cool cyberpunk feature and bad cyberpunk feature.
Yeah.
Where the cool cyberpunk feature is we have access to our video games on any device anywhere, regardless of their individual computing capacity.
In a bad cyberpunk future where there's three or four big corporations that control absolutely all media.
Yeah. Disney, Google, Amazon, Comcast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not that many.
Yeah.
Like, Disney just finished their acquisition of Fox.
Yep.
So, you know, everybody makes that joke that, you know, oh, the alien queen is a Disney princess now. No, she's a Disney queen, because remember, in Disney, queens are evil.
Right.
So.
Mosquito on your head there.
Ugh. Yeah. Gross.
It looked like a mosquito.
No, it was a mosquito. I just got smeared my own blood on my forehead. Gross.
Oh.
Yeah. We might need some citronella candles out here.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So Shiva's not here tonight because she is like every part of a Chakat deep in furry fiesta preparation.
Yeah, it's a week away.
But I was like, it was a 70 degree day today. It's still pretty nice now, so we're on my patio. And I am not as prepared as Shiva because I don't do patio stuff that often. We don't have a pergola on the big patio. We're on our small side patio, and I actually don't have any citronella candles or Deep Woods Off or anything like that. So.
Well, so the bad cyberpunk feature of megacorps owning all the media, we're getting there real quick.
I did have a question, though, because you mentioned Humble Bundle. Did they ever actually put AAA games like Assassin's Creed on?
Yeah.
Really?
It's, like, generally about a year after they come out, or, like, 8 months if the game didn't sell super well.
I always thought the game bundles were always, like, these little games that no one had ever heard of.
It really depends. So, like, the Humble Indie Bundle 20 that I talked about a couple weeks ago was all indie games. But then, like, I got a copy of The Division 1 a few months back. I got a copy
of big Tom Clancy
Mafia 3, I think. I got a copy of Warhammer Vermintide 2 that I gave to Graveyard Greg so his boyfriend and he could play it together, because I already had a copy of the game.
Like, you sent Tieran some codes.
I sent Tieran, like, the massive list of codes, but it never got back to me. But they're still there. They don't expire.
We have also been extremely busy because
with Fiesta.
Yeah, because Tieran is the publications staff member for Fiesta, so he does the layout for the con book, both print and digital, and he just finished and ordered the layout of the pocket schedule.
Yeah.
So he's been busy with that. Plus, on top of that, we have our Fur Planet responsibilities for Furry Fiesta, which involves inventory, restocking, and doing the layout of the four or five-ish new things that we'll have.
Well, I'm not, like, ragging on him. Those codes are not going to go bad.
Oh, yeah, I'm just talking. I'm creating content.
Yes. So, Fiesta, 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 Fiesta.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I did get my PowerPoint done for the your first con panel.
It looked really good.
Yeah, I'm real happy with some of the new layout options in Keynote. And I got some photos from people. I got the permission from that artist to use the panels. And so, like, it's this nice, comprehensive, like, 2022 panel keynote / PowerPoint.
I was wondering what that was, because I was actually thinking, man, this looks really good. It has a really good design sense. And I guess it's one of the available templates. And
it's one of the templates in Apple Keynote.
Cool.
So it's probably on your laptop. We can look after the show. But yeah, so getting ready for Fiesta, like getting all the games up to speed. I'm having a nightmare world of trying to unlock everything in Smash Brothers Ultimate. It sucks ass to do this. Mm-hmm. I should have done this months ago because it's going to take me a long ass time to do. I'm not good at this game. And also it's noted like, yeah, as you unlock more characters, the unlock fights get harder.
Oh,
until
great.
Like at towards the end, the AI is set to the hardest difficulty. And I'm like, great, I guess I'm never going to get Isabelle. So
that game's already out. The one that Isabelle's in.
Yeah, I felt really bad because I was playing Villager and one of the fights is against Isabelle. Uh-huh. And I had, like, this sword, and my character, like, slashed her, and was like, oh, God. And she gets the little, like, shocked face when she gets hit. And I'm like, oh, God, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, Doggo Waifu.
Is there a hug option?
So, yeah, Fiesta very soon. But I think the biggest point that people, like, a good reference point for anybody kind of concerned about our all-digital streaming future mm-hmm. is the Scott Pilgrim versus the World game that was on Xbox 360 Arcade. Uh-huh. It was a digital-only game. It had a custom soundtrack from Anamanaguchi and was this really good 2D pixel art beat-em-up game
mm-hmm.
that once the license expired for the game, disappeared. Like, if you had it downloaded, cool. If you had a license to download it, it still exists on their servers.
So you can download it again.
But you can't buy it anymore. And there's no way to legally purchase or have
this. Right, there's not a cartridge or a disc or anything that you can go to a store and buy.
Yeah. And, like, games preservation nowadays is kind of a lost art in a way. Because games that ship on disc often have updates or they have to call a home server. Street Fighter V took me an hour to install on my PlayStation 4 when I installed it the other day. But even, like, my Switch titles, which are on little cartridges, still have to download updates. And there's certain games that require, like, additional downloads plus the cartridge to function. Like, I don't own it, but, like, Wolfenstein 2 for the Switch is, like, you have this 32-gig cartridge, but then you got a 14-gig download in addition to that.
Mm.
So certain games, like, if the net goes down or something, the servers stop working, there are games you just can't play. When they shut off the Destiny servers, you're stuck. You can't play Destiny anymore. When they shut down The Division, when they shut down any of these online service games, mm-hmm. games as a service things, you're just out of luck.
I remember reading about that a couple years ago, that some long-running game that had long since been out of development, but the company had kept the server online, finally shut down the servers for this 10, 15-year-old game, and a lot of people were still playing it just because they like noodling around on this old game.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, oh, the servers are shutting down for this.
They did that for Demon's Souls, the original one, for PlayStation 3. They had kept the servers up for almost a decade. And that was a game you could call for help. People could come into your game and help you, or people could come into your game and murder you. You know, it was all luck of the draw. But it was a social element, and people could leave messages using keywords.
Uh-huh.
So, like, beware trap ahead, or amazing chest ahead, and there's, like, this giantess lady with big tits. But those messages are gone, so there's an element to this game that has just ceased to be.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
On the plus side, I'm like, of the plus side of Google being a massive monopoly corporation, they have no shortage of servers, server capability. So, like, I imagine that if this is something that they make and they decide to keep going, there's no reason they would ever have to shut down a server for a game because they have the money and the equipment to spare. Yeah.
It's just a matter of them, of political will, essentially.
Yeah. Speaking of when you were talking about how Google just kind of gives up on something and shutters it, it reminded me of an article I read a couple months back where, like, their big experiment into Google Fiber, where this one little town in, like, Kansas or something like that. Not little, like a mid-sized city or something.
It was like Omaha or something. I know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah. But basically, this city, like, gave them all these tax breaks and all these incentives and shit like that, invited Google in. Google tore up all their streets and shit like that, installing all of this infrastructure. And then they ran Google Fiber for a few years, and people were enjoying Google Fiber. And then Google was just like, we're pulling out of this. So now there's all these fiber lines and there's no internet service connected to them.
Yeah. There's a lot of places with dark fiber, and there's lots of laws that prohibit municipal internets because capitalism.
Yeah. That was what happened to Tilton originally up in Washington when he bought a house that was supposed to be serviced by Comcast, but it turned out that it wasn't, and there was physically no actual cable lines running to his property, and the city was willing to do it, but there was a law in that particular area that they couldn't have a municipal internet. Like, it was okay in parts of the area, but not in other parts or something like that. And, like, so they had to kludge something together. And eventually, he was able to get internet, which is super important for him because he works remote. He teleworks.
Yeah.
Yeah, he works remote. So it's sort of like, hey, this is my fucking job that I left the Bay Area because I wanted to buy a house and try buying a house in the Bay Area. Yeah.
Don't try that, kids.
And hell, even up there now in the Seattle Sound area, it's also getting ungodly expensive to buy houses up there.
Yep. So having everything just so ephemeral, it's something that will have to be addressed in the future because, like, right now, okay, they're going to say they're going to do it, but how long are they going to support it? That's the real question mark.
Yeah.
But this is also probably several months out from launch, and they'll be giving out more information. I'm sure there's been more information during GDC, which has been this last weekend, or it's this week, actually.
Is that Game Developer Conference?
Game Developer Conference in San Francisco. And they announced shit all week, and it's primarily, like, a networking and educational thing, and talking about, like, Game Workers Unite is doing some big pushes there this weekend.
I retweeted one of their things recently, yeah. Once I started learning more and more about how the game development job industry functions, I was kind of horrified.
Yeah.
And now that there's a push, after all these people have been laid off by big companies with no fucking warning, now there's finally a push to unionize, and that industry really needs to unionize.
Yeah, Scott Benson was out there talking about co-op development, and Game Workers Unite had multiple things where they were passing out flyers and information. They're backed by AFL-CIO now. Like, they're getting support from one of the biggest labor unions in the country.
IWW.
Oh, another cool thing, speaking of unions, Anchor Steam Brewery in San Francisco successfully unionized their workplace with, like, 3/4 of the employees assenting to join the union.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really cool.
Also, there was only ever one burger restaurant company that had a union, and now there's a second one. Like, I guess they're a chain in another part of the country. I think this was the Pacific Northwest, but another group unionized, basically. And the original group was like, we used to pride ourselves on being the only burger service worker union, but we're so happy to, like, welcome another one in, and, like, we're hopefully, like, the first of many, and, you know, we'll help start up new ones. And these are all, like, they're smaller chains that I hadn't heard of because they're not local to me, but man, I would love to see, like, Burger King and McDonald's workers unionize.
Yeah.
Because they're everywhere, and it's a real shit job, and they really should be paid more.
Yeah.
I mean, I've worked a fast food job. It sucks, and they really don't care about their workers, you know? Like, even back then, I was like, hey, I got to leave by 10 because I got an 8 a.m. class and an hour commute. This is back when I was in college. And they were like, oh, no, if you're working closing shift under register, you have to stay until everything is cleaned up. So, like, even though we closed at 10.
You begin at 11:30.
Yeah. Exactly. And I'm like,
I did that too.
You know, I fucking told you guys I need to be out at 10. And this can't be full time. So, you know, I'd be working like 37 and a half hours. Oh, it's part time.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
The current job market is so weighed against workers of every stripe. It's not just tech or video games. It's every single company. If they can get away with it, they will step on your balls.
Yeah. And this is one of the candidates for the Democratic presidential primary wants to do a UBI of $1,000 a month. And it's like, but if you don't have a shitload of other restrictions in place, then people are just like, oh, I can raise your rent by $500 a month because I know you got that extra grand coming in from the government. Yeah. So if you put UBI in place, but you don't have some other kind of market control and regulation around all the other things that people need to live, it's like, oh, yeah, everyone's income goes up by a grand a month, and now the cost of living goes up more. Yeah.
The other thing, talking of unions, is that Kickstarter's staff is planning to unionize.
I saw the headline on that, but I have not read up on it. Do you know more about that?
They're unionizing their workplace. They're basically saying, hey, we need to have better guarantees about our work and guarantees about layoffs and stuff. Basically covering their own asses and saying mutual support. And it's really interesting because their leadership at the company is basically trying to woke shame them. It's like, oh, generally unions are more reserved for more put upon workers in society, and people that work at Kickstarter are very privileged and well paid, so we don't see why they would want a union.
We're the good guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was this sort of like, but we don't treat them like shit. They're not losing their fingers and machinery and getting black lung.
Well, then you don't have anything to worry about if they unionize.
Exactly. I also kind of like, well, you know, that's right. You know, normally, if these companies unionize, these managers and company owners, CEOs that don't do anything, might have to treat us better. Wow. Mm-hmm. You know, we have this very strong American tradition of just taking it up the ass when it comes to our jobs. And being told anti-union BS from middle school onward, you know, we don't learn anything about the coal wars or anything about the mechanics unions or anything like that. Mm-hmm. We bitch about, these union guys are getting all these breaks. Yeah, because they're working their asses off and they get mandated breaks. The better question is, why aren't you getting these mandated breaks?
That's this is a conversation.
Flip it around, man.
Like, I had this conversation with my sister, who's sometimes far from woke or progressive, and she's like, you know, I make $15 an hour at my job. I don't see why, like, fucking people at McDonald's should make $15 an hour. And I'm like, well, if people at McDonald's make $15 an hour, then maybe you should be making 20 or 25.
Yeah.
You know? Like, this is that rising ocean lifts all boats analogy.
It's the whole thing where it's like, The plate of cookies, you have the CEO taking 11 of the 12 cookies, you left with one, and then he points at someone less than you and says, oh, they want to steal your cookie.
Right, yeah. And it's divide and conquer. The rich get richer by making the lower classes of income fight amongst themselves.
For telling the scraps.
The middle class that it's, oh, all these illegal immigrants are coming into this country and they're stealing jobs because they're working for like $2 an hour. And it's like, no, motherfucker. You know, not when they're hoarding the 99.9% of the money.
Yeah. Bill Gates just became the second billionaire worth more than $100 billion. That's not good.
Yeah.
You know, the wealth of the super wealthy went up like 20% worldwide over the past few years.
Yeah.
How is your living situation going, friends?
Yeah, everyone else's wages stagnate.
Yeah. You know, I've been complaining a bunch. They're jacking our rent, $400 if we don't move out. But all the rents around here are going up. But that's like more than a third increase.
Yeah.
Of what we already pay for literally nothing.
Right, yeah.
Like, even the shitty apartment complexes across from us have changed out their lights to be proper, like, bright whites. And ours are still, like,
I noticed embers. That.
Yeah, because...
Because like, driving down that dark-ass road, it's like driving in a colon. Like, it twists constantly, and it's dark as fuck.
Yeah. So it's like our complex hasn't done anything for us other than just be like, hey, we're going to suck out more of your lifeblood. $5,000 extra a year for nothing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah. That's not acceptable. The housing market around here is not as bad as in other cities, you know, but you're still paying massively inflated prices.
In a way, it's helpful that Dallas is not seen as a quote-unquote cool place to live. Because a lot of the NorCal people are moving to, like, Austin.
Yeah.
And Austin is having a real rent crisis.
Yeah, it's like, it's a cool place to live, and all the people in that city are getting pushed out of their gentrified neighborhoods. I mean, hell, even my parents' neighborhood has seen some weird pricing stuff. Uh-huh. Like, this house across from theirs, it's this tiny little thing, two-story, maybe 1,500 square foot, this old little house.
Right.
Still sold for $160,000.
Yeah.
In a fairly rough neighborhood. There's houses on the corner. I think one went for $180,000, and it was literally built in, like, the 1920s. And it, like, got renovated after getting gutted by fire. It's insane how some of the, like, the property speculation and stuff is. You saw a poll, I think it was, that we discussed it over lunch the other day.
Oh,
about
yes,
people
yes.
that, like, own a home or can't own a home.
It was a furry that posted a poll. It was a simple yes or no. Do you own a house? And renting in a house doesn't count. You know, if you have a mortgage or you own your home outright, answer yes. And, like, when I answered the question, it was 80-20. And then I saw it changed to, like, 21-79. And I haven't checked it in a couple of days to see where it finally ended up. But, yeah, the vast majority of the people answering did not own.
Yeah.
And part of that is, I think, influenced by the furry demographic. Like, we're a very young, trending fandom. So a lot of people are just not at that stage in their lives yet. But it also indicates that, like, yeah, there's a lot of people our age that don't own either.
Yeah. And I really am getting very tired of living in an apartment.
Yeah. Limited space, stompy neighbors.
Barky dogs. The only dog that should be barking at random shit is Adam.
Right.
And not all the other dogs in the neighborhood.
From what you've told me, he's not super vocal on a normally. He's not one of those little I'm going to yap all the time dogs.
No, but because of our new upstairs stompy neighbor, like,
it startles him.
If it startles him, and if they, like, they shut their front door too hard, he thinks someone's at our door, and he goes barking to the...
Yeah.
And so he's been a little less chill since our neighbor moved in up there. And, like, our upstairs neighbor seems nice enough. They're not rude or weird. They're pretty quiet otherwise. It's just they're a little heavy-footed. I really want a fucking house. I want to have a yard for Adam to run in.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to maybe have another dog that's not necessarily just Adam-sized.
Right.
But that's not a possibility to me in my current living situation. And it's just driving me nuts. I mean, shit, I'll be 36 here in a couple months.
Yeah.
And I don't want to rent for the rest of my life. It drives me nuts. That's just kind of a thing, you know. This is us, you know, we can say, oh, it's us being old, but really it's not. It's us having to live in this situation where people desperately want to own houses, but because of the market, we can't. And then you have the situation where it's like these people wanting to retire can't sell their houses because nobody can afford.
Yep.
It all boils down to the rich getting richer and capitalism continuing to just screw us over constantly.
And around here, like, the last couple houses that have sold in my neighborhood have gone to people that are renting them out.
Yeah.
One by a big company, like Redfin, bought one down the street from me and has it up for lease now. And it's like, that's another house that a family couldn't purchase and move into, you know?
Yeah. The one across the way here, it sold and then it was being rented out.
Yep. Which I guess that a rental company can probably outbid other people that want to just buy the place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that one wasn't even going for that much. And, like, the payments would have been really easily doable and a lot less than what the asking rent was for that place.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, this is just these rich vampires.
That's probably $2,000, $2,500.
$2,400.
It's, yeah.
Was what it was listed on the website.
Wow.
Because I was like, what the hell? Because, like, there was that other one right over there I had my eye on and it sold, but it at least didn't get bought to rent out, as far as I can tell.
No, it was bought by person, because I can tell, because, like, with the other one, as soon as the for sale sign went down, the for lease sign went up. So I knew. But the other one across the way did not do that. So I assumed that a person bought it.
So basically, the rich are screwing us over. Quit fighting amongst your people in the lower classes. Hell, the people we should point our knives at are the rich. Vore them. Vore them
all. Tyrion and I were like, shit, I wish we had been able to buy two houses back when we bought this place, because, like, we'd be seeing a pretty tidy little income from renting one at this point, you know? Of course, we would have two mortgages, and 6 years ago, we were like, yay, we can afford a really nice house for a reasonable sum, but we didn't have double what we paid to buy a second house back then.
Yeah, and the housing prices have gone up, like, nearly $150,000 for this area since then.
They've just about doubled,
basically. Yeah. So, yeah, you would have seen a tidy investment, but then when the Great Leap Forward occurred, you'd be amongst the landlords that our Mio Mao would put to death.
They hopefully wouldn't guillotine me for owning one extra house, but...
No, I'm kidding.
Because I wouldn't be a billionaire, but... Yeah.
Like, but are you exploiting the people renting your house? Are you a slumlord? So that has been this week's... Well, no, this has not been the entirety of this week's Anti-Capitalist Corner. Because we have some other stuff to talk about.
Oh, we don't restrict that to one segment.
Oh, no. So this is really messed up.
Oh, God.
So we're
what
gonna,
have you got for me?
So this one is the what if microtransactions, but for planes?
Oh my God, this fucking hell. I cannot believe anybody thought this was a good idea. Like, holy shit. Like, okay, you build a plane, you sell it to an airline. A microtransaction or an upgrade would be like, well, you'll have nicer leather seats in first class. Or this plane has more amenities for the crew to make it easier for them to do their jobs or something. But not like... literally a sensor that if it's not there causes it not to detect a vital engine issue or whatever.
The New York Times article for this was just Boeing will stop charging to install safety features after deadly crashes.
Didn't
Boeing
like 340
jets,
people die because of this?
I think about that many. Doomed Boeing jets lacked two safety features that companies sold only as extras.
Sorry, safety features and airplane
and extra
should never be sold as extras. Like, if it's a safety feature, that should be fucking standard equipment.
Yeah. As the pilots of the doomed Boeing jets in Ethiopia and Indonesia fought to control their planes, they lacked two notable safety features in their cockpits. For one reason, Boeing charged extra for them. So, traditionally optional features like premium seating, fancy lighting, extra bathrooms, but they're also doing this with, like, communication, navigation, and safety systems. And a lot of airlines in poorer countries and poorer sections of the world don't afford these things.
And people were blaming, they were like, oh, it's a shithole country, so that's why their plane crashed. But it turned out that, no, it's a country that's not quite as rich as the United States is, so their national airline didn't pay the upgrade fee.
This is the new 737 MAX airliner that has had two crashes in the last 6 months that resulted in a good number of deaths.
Yeah.
But the reason that they weren't able to figure out what exactly was causing the plane to go into a dive and kill everybody was that they didn't have a sensor that would set off an alarm to let them know what was going on. It just was like, IDK, you're missing a light on the panel. Oh, sorry, you didn't click to unlock that DLC, so there's a dummy light there that doesn't do anything.
Right. But there's this blank space, like, this is where the cruise control would be, except it is... this is where the we're all going to die light would be, and that's fucked up.
Yeah.
That is peak late-stage capitalism for a company to do that.
Hey, guess what? Previously, before the mandate of seatbelts, they were extra. Prior to the mandate, airbags were extra.
Yeah, for cars.
Basic safety features that will hopefully save you from being killed in a car wreck were extras that they were charging for.
Windshields. Going even further back, windshields, brake lights, then later on the third brake light, probably side mirrors, and then in more modern times, like the 80s, I think, or when airbags were mandated, And that was only like the driver's side airbag. And I think later on they manned it, and it was like, ooh, our car is extra good because it has a passenger airbag. So like you both won't be killed. But they later mandated like dual airbags at least is standard in cars now.
So dual airbags were only mandatory after September 1st, 1998. In the last 20 years.
Happy 20th anniversary to dual airbags.
Yeah, that's wild. I figured, it'd be in the 80s. No,
one airbag was mandatory in the 80s. Yeah, it wasn't until 98 that it was
the law required. Because, and the thing is, the Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act of 91 was when the law was passed, and they gave the companies 7 years to enact the law.
Right.
So, obviously, like, there was probably companies that did it immediately after, like, the next model year, but it was still just like, wow, that was a long period of time to make it mandatory.
I bet a lot of models at that time were probably, like, the upgrade option was having two before it became mandatory. Did it have two?
Yeah.
But see, this is the thing. This is why regulation is a good thing. Why the government has to come in and be like, hey, all these car crash statistics could be reduced if we make car companies put a second airbag in. And it takes a government enforcing that. And important to note, 1991, that would have been under a Republican administration.
Yeah, that would have been H.W. Bush.
He took office in 88, yeah. So that would have been the last year of H.W. Bush's presidency. Mm-hmm. And they had a Democratic Congress at the time, but I'm assuming he didn't veto it or anything. So.
No, I mean, it was just like, yeah, sure, that makes sense. They're not going to deny two airbags to own the libs. We weren't to that level of hell world
yet. Yeah. Not saying that George H.W. Bush was a good person, but at least they were not quite at that level of evil.
So, speaking of government regulation...
Flying through my windshield to own the lips.
And I tried to roll coal and smoke and eat a well-done steak with ketchup to own the libs. And then I didn't wear my seatbelt to own the libs. I've crashed into someone else's house, impaling myself. But those libs sure were owned. So also speaking of, though, good governmental regulation, New Zealand.
Yeah, New Zealand.
It took them a week.
3 days. I read the article. It was 3 days to put this law into place.
So, New Zealand has banned military-style semi-automatics and assault rifles. So, basically, AR-15s. So, if it's not a hunting rifle and it's not a shotgun, fuck you. They did it in 3 days. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says expectations the law will be in place by April 11th. They said they will do a buyback scheme. And they're like, this could cost us up to 200 million New Zealand, but whatever.
And apparently, New Zealand has a pretty healthy gun lobby. I read an article on CNN about this. It was basically, how does New Zealand's response time to this tragedy compare to the United States? And it actually went through some of our major shooting incidents. And it's like, this is what happened after Sandy Hook. And it was like, the state of Connecticut, where Sandy Hook occurred, they banned a bunch of extra stuff and tightened some other regulations. And it took like a month, I think. And that was one of the faster ones. And there was some stuff in Florida after a Marjorie Stone Douglas shooting. And it was like 3 months. But then there was another one where there was like this big thing happened in these other states, tightened restrictions. And then it was like, I think it was like Kansas. It was like that loosened restrictions to like go the opposite way. You know, they like added support for will honor concealed carry permits from all the other states, whereas previously they hadn't. So, I don't know, just to be dicks, just to be like, rawr, own the libs.
We need more guns.
Yeah. And yeah. It's really nuts that whenever there is a Democratic president, gun sales go through the roof. Because even though it's been proven time and time again through 8 years of Clinton and 8 years of Obama, they never came for the guns. But everyone still thinks they're going to come for the guns.
They're going to put us all in FEMA camps and steal our children, which is exactly what they're doing now.
Yeah, when people thought Clinton was going to be the president, there was these jokes going around about Obama was like, hey, Hillary, I totally forgot to take all the guns, so can you take care of that, lol, you know? Like, yeah. I've had 8 years, I forgot to do it.
Like, oh, whoops, slipped my mind.
Yeah.
But in this, you know, people were voluntarily turning in their guns. Like, I saw a tweet thread where a guy was like, he had a AR-15-style gun, and he brought it in its case to be destroyed by the police. And he said, it's like, it was the most ass-puckering thing ever, walking up this long walkway towards a policewoman at the door with a, you know, assault rifle under her arm, carrying a gun in its case.
Yeah.
But he was like, I don't want this in my house and in my life. And this happened after the massacre in Australia that prompted their gun law changes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, there's lots of replies where it's like, oh, you know, did they not try thoughts and prayers first?
Yeah, yeah. Like, wow, they went right to a solution. Like, God, don't they know how this works? Don't they know that their gun lobby is supposed to pay them off and send thoughts and prayers?
I mean, and it doesn't take, this isn't like, oh, you have no guns. I mean, you can have a shotgun. If you're a farmer, you should probably have a shotgun in case of, like, wild dogs. But you can't kill 50 people with a shotgun.
Right.
Easily.
I mean, you know,
they hold 5 shells at once.
My thought on a farm was, if an animal is injured and is not going to recover and you have to put them down.
Yeah. Or, you know, you have a hunting rifle, which, again, they are like single shot or small magazine. You can't crank off 35 rounds into a crowd of people.
And I'd heard of bump stocks, but I hadn't read up on them to know what they really were. And I didn't know that a bump stock basically turns a semi-automatic into an automatic.
Yeah.
That it can fire multiple rounds with one pull of the trigger with a bump stock.
Yeah, it basically makes it so that the trigger mechanism gets all jiggly, so that the recoil from firing one bullet will allow you to continue firing. So yeah. Those are still a thing. They haven't been made completely illegal, I don't think, yet.
I believe they have. The article I read, at least, in there was a federal-level thing after Las Vegas, I think.
Where I'm going to Google that real quick.
Yeah, it's an article I read earlier today.
So actually, with the bump stock ban is just days away, what will owners do? Let's see.
And it's pretty amazing. This happened in the Trump administration. This bump stock ban. So, like, they want to piss and moan about Democrats taking their guns in a fully Republican-controlled government. This bump stock ban went into effect.
And it's this Boise, Idaho article, and it's like, if I get caught with one, I'm a felon. It seems to me that's entrapment in the biggest way. I bought that thing legally with my hard-earned money, said the 60-year-old Lunsford, who has at one time owned 6 AR-15 rifles he built from kits, as well as a World War II German submachine gun. Let me put on my really big thinking emoji face with that one. Bump stock, an attachment used by the killer during the 2017 Las Vegas massacre to make his weapons fire rapidly like machine guns, will become fully illegal on Tuesday in the only major gun restriction imposed by the federal government in the past few years, a period that has seen massacres in places like Las Vegas, Thousand Oaks, California, Sutherland Springs, Texas, and Orlando and Parkland, Florida. Unlike with the decade-long assault weapon bans, the government isn't allowing existing owners to keep their bump stocks. They must be destroyed or turned over to authorities. And the government isn't offering any compensation for the devices, which can cost hundreds of dollars. Violators can face up to 10 years in prison and thousands of dollars in fine. Well, they can just deal with it. Okay, cool. I had heard rumblings about them being banned, but I did not know the timescale. So, but this, I mean, this happened in Las Vegas. Las Vegas happened over a year ago.
Yeah.
Where that one dude murdered like 100-something people and injured 500 more. Like, the scale of carnage from just one asshole with high-capacity guns was astounding. And so, okay, good. You know, there is one tiny little thing, but this is after, you know, Vegas was hundreds of people. Thousands Oaks, California was a bunch of people. Parkland was what? How many students? Like 30? Orlando, the Pulse Massacre. Like,
mm-hmm. Just it was 48, I think.
Yeah, Pulse. But like, just that mentioned here is like many hundreds, like at least 500 people, probably.
I think it was like 58 at Las Vegas that actually died. And it's the most, it is currently the deadliest mass shooting in modern
history. But like lots US more history. People were injured.
Oh, well, yeah, yeah, totally. Like it was like 58 killed and 500 injured.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, even if I lived, if I got fucking shot in the arm going to a country concert, I'd be pretty fucking pissed.
Yeah.
You know?
This is hundreds of people injured or killed in the last couple of years, and the most we can do is, well, bump stocks are banned. It's a step in the right direction, but it's nowhere near enough.
Yeah.
I'm glad that New Zealand took some concrete action, and everyone's always like, oh, you know, criminals totally follow laws. I was like, yeah, this makes it worse for them if they don't.
And it also makes it harder to get, because you can't get them legally. And unless you're criminally minded, finding ways to do things illegally is difficult. Like, I wouldn't have the first fucking clue how to buy pot, let alone buy an automatic weapon.
Yeah.
You know?
Me neither. And, like, there's, like, I know people that I'm not going to go do that. So that is good. Also good is that there's now completely reverse-engineered ways to make your very own Chick-fil-A chicken sandwiches at home that taste exactly like Chick-fil-A chicken. Let's take a look. So, it really can't be that difficult.
It's, apparently it is pretty specific. It's, there's something to do with a pickle-based brine that they use that makes them taste so good. Like, now, so I remember way back in the day, like, yeah, I enjoyed Chick-fil-A chicken. It's really good. Nothing else tastes quite like it. But I have not supported that company in probably 10 years. Whenever it is first came out that they were supporting all of these anti-gay causes, or at least when I first heard about it.
Yeah.
It's 6 to 10 years ago. I can't remember the last time I ate it at Chick-fil-A.
I mean, we used to go to it on podcast nights.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then we found out and we stopped.
Right, yeah. And like, yeah, Chick-fil-A sandwiches are good. Their waffle fries are good. Their little cheesecake dessert is good, but I'm not supporting that company.
The recipe itself is really fairly simple. I mean, it requires you having some spices on hand, half cup kosher salt, a quarter cup of sugar, and a cold water. Then you basically brine them, and then you combine it, basically salt and sugar, to sweeten up your chicken. That's weird. And then, like, it uses a particular array of spices, and then you fry them. That's really it. It's actually really simple to do. That it?
We ought to have a big gay bootleg Chick-fil-A party or something like that. Where we make like a shitload of them and they'll be like, it tastes the same.
Yeah, like.
And also, it's just like, come on. It's not like we're starved for food options in this country, you know? Like, if you care about gay people at all, you should not be fucking eating a Chick-fil-A.
How much brine are you supposed to have? That's actually missing in this recipe.
Mm.
But basically, it's pickle brine, sugar, and salt. And then you let them brine overnight, and then you make fried chicken, and you fry the chicken. So, yeah, it's really simple to do. I should totally come over at some point and get Ajax to be my kitchen assistant, and we can make a video, make the gay Chick-fil-A. Expect that for Patreon.com. At some point in the future, maybe.
Maybe you can also do food coloring to make them rainbow colored.
Maybe.
That would be difficult, I imagine.
But yeah, like, basically, Chick-fil-A as a company, as corporate, has increased its donation to anti-gay.
Yeah, that was the thing stuff. I was going to point out, that the numbers came out, and they've actually increased their contribution. At the same time, they're publicly saying they don't want to be known as an anti-gay company, but they're increasing their contributions to anti-gay causes.
They gave $1.8 million to discriminatory groups in 2017, despite reportedly claiming it was winding down the practice in a previous year.
And the way they're trying to justify this is that, well, technically it's not Chick-fil-A. It's the Chick-fil-A Foundation that is handling all of this money. And it's like, no, that, fuck you.
The thing is, a lot of Chick-fil-A restaurants are franchisees.
That'd be like me donating to Ted Cruz and then being like, no, 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 For Planet donated to Ted Cruz.
I'm trying to do some minor delineation here. Most of the franchisees, they can be individually good, but they are still part of the corporate structure that is money. Franchise fees still go back to the main company.
Yep, and profits still go into their coffers.
The foundation that goes to this stuff. So if you support Chick-fil-A period, your money is still going to end up in small portions in the coffers of anti-gay people. So you can do this. It's a free country, but
yeah,
you know,
but you know, there's be so many, fully informed.
There's better options out there, like
KFC.
I mean, hell yeah, KFC. If you really had to, I mean, you can get three crappy McChickens for the cost of one sandwich from Chick-fil-A. You know, quantity over quality. But I mean, there's plenty of other food options that you can go to.
Yeah.
That don't directly fund anti-gay, anti-Muslim groups or anti-anything.
Yeah. I imagine they're not fond of trans people either. I haven't
heard
anything in particular about that, but...
Well, if they're donated to anti-gay causes, it's going to be de facto anti-trans.
Yeah. I'd heard, like, conversion therapy was something that they were supporting.
Yeah, which obviously is not good.
Which is basically a torture camp for gay teenagers.
Yeah.
But, you know, this country really loves abusing children, you know? All these kids in cages at the border and, no, it's not a cage. It is a fenced-off area for their own protection. Fuck you. This was apparently a congressional testimony.
Yeah. Where, like, no, they're in a enclosed area surrounded by a fence, but don't call it a cage.
Right.
Because it's open air, so they're not protected from the rain or whatever. Think of it more like a zoo enclosure. Oh, no.
Yeah, and they'll totally make that fucking comparison, because saying that people of other races are animals is totally not a racist dog whistle. And Republicans will fucking do that night and day.
Actually, there was a Fox News personality. Her show is not airing for the second week in a row after her comments about... But
there was some country in particular where she said that those people are filthy, uneducated animals or something like that.
And
I don't remember the particular country.
But there's so many to choose from that they could be talking garbage about.
Yeah, any country not America. It's the hypocrisy of a country that cares so much about single-cell organisms that might grow into a baby. But as soon as that baby is born, put it in a cage or deny it health care or let it grow to the age of 5 and go get shot in an elementary school.
Demand better, people.
George Carlin had a good line on this. Like, if you're pre-born, you're okay. If you're preschool, you're fucked. And another George Carlin quote in that same segment is, they want live babies to grow up to become dead soldiers. And then he tied it into America's basically ongoing war around the world. And this was in the 90s. This was after the first Gulf War. You know, this was before Afghanistan and Iraq. And
I mean, wasn't there just some anniversary of, like, we're now in like the 18th year of the Iraq War? Or some ungodly thing like that, where children now born before 9/11 can now fight in the war that started on 9/11?
On 9/11, yeah. We invaded Iraq in 2003, so it's 16 years old.
Okay.
Well, here's the other thing. There was an Onion article a couple years ago where it was about new recruit looking forward to taking up dad's old patrol route in Afghanistan. And then, like, fucking 2 weeks ago, there was a legit real article about this kid who was 18 and had signed up, and she was going to be working in the same unit as her father in the same area. Like, they're going to be in the same war zone together. So it's like, it's a fucking Onion article that came true. And if you've been following the news and you're like, can't tell whether it's a real headline or the Onion, this is where we're at now, where Onion articles are coming true. I mean, that's happened before, but, like, Jesus Christ.
There was another article, I think, from around that same time that was also, like, local teen can't wait to fight all new terrorists created by bomb we just dropped.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So, whew. It's a fucked up world, friends. Try to demand better of your people, of your country, of your politics. We're a little older than probably the average age of the furries that listen to this. But we're learning, and you got plenty of time to learn, too, to demand better of your politicians and demand better of your government. Be mindful of what the government's wanting to do. You know, we have some choices that are going to have to be made in the next few years. You know, we're looking down the barrel of climate change. We're looking down, you know, what's going to happen in 2020. Like, we got this clown car of Democratic politicians lining up to see who wants to run. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some real funny Photoshops, and I posted an image today of John Arbuckle and Beto O'Rourke. It's like, who wore it better? Was like the initial caption, and I was like, don't watch the movie till you've read the original manga. But, you know, it's going to have to see how that shakes out. Need to get involved and do better for the kids that are going to come after us.
Yeah.
So that there can be kids that come after us.
I am concerned about Beto because, like, in a couple of different ways. First of all, the far left totally shitting on him is sort of pissing me off because they were all for him taking down Cruz, you know, and totally behind us and backing us then. But, you know, now he's in this larger field of Democrats and suddenly he's an awful person. But on the other side, it's like, I agree, he should make some changes. You know, he's basically running a reskinned Obama campaign of being very hope and change and platitudes, but not real big on super firm policy decisions.
Yeah. Like, he's not for, like, Medicare for all or universal health care. He's not signed on to not take money from fossil fuel industry, stuff mm-hmm. like that.
In fact, like, he's had previously taken quite a bit of money from fossil fuel industries when he was in Congress.
Which, I mean, it's Texas.
It's Texas. That's going to happen. You know, it's great that he's doing the only small donors, no super PACs thing like Obama did. But I think he really needs to drift a lot leftward. And, you know, and I want to see us, like, politicians on the left need to not be afraid to just be like, fuck yeah, you can call it socialism if you want, but this is what I believe we should do, and start really advocating some of the policies that us on the left want to see happen. Like, UBI should be a thing. Sharply raising the minimum wage should be a thing. Being pro-union and a massive commitment to climate change legislation really needs to be a thing. And if they're really feeling brave, someone really needs to take on the NRA and be like, no, we're not going to do this bullshit anymore.
Thoughts and prayers ain't working, y'all.
Yeah. Like, well, right now the CDC is not even allowed to do studies on gun death statistics.
Yeah, they're prohibited by law.
Yeah, like, that is fucked up. Like, the NRA lobbied to make it illegal to even have the CDC research this. Now, independent private organizations conduct research, but because the CDC is a government institution,
yeah,
they
don't have the same weight.
They don't have that. Yeah. It's like, for fuck's sake. It's ridiculous that they can come in and be like, hey, how about we make it illegal for the CDC to research this? And Congress went along with it. It's anyway, losing my mind up in here. So, emails.
So, you can email us at southpawscast@gmail.com. You can contact us via Tumblr at southpawscast.tumblr.com. You can find us on Patreon, patreon.com/southpawscast. You can send us messages there, too, if you gave us money. That'd be great. You should totally do that. But we do have a couple emails this week. One, this funny photo for your viewing pleasure, and a furthermore 2019 con report. So yep. We're going to take the funny photo image. Attached is a highway advertisement for the artificial grass turf company. No, seriously. Regards, Linty. It is a Putin the seeds and it comes up Trumps.
And it only costs a few pence.
It's an Australian company because it's like a something.com.au or it's a .other country.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty funny. Putin the seed and it comes up Trump's and it only costs a few pence. It's good to know that other countries can make fun of our horrible situation.
Yeah.
But it's on, like, Google Maps, so I'd have to, like, find the location for it.
Yeah.
But
I mean, it'd be hilarious if it wasn't for the fact that the United States throws its weight around the entire world, so the fucked up shit we do here affects everybody else.
Yeah.
Okay, so our second email is a furthermore 2019 con report from JD. So thank you very much for writing in with this. Hello, Southpaws. JD writing in with a con report of furthermore 2019. The con took place March 15th to 17th at the Sheraton in Tysons Corner, Virginia. This was the con's seventh year, and so the theme was furthermore 007, Furry Never Dies, with furry author and noted James Bond enthusiast Husky Tear as guest of honor. This was also my seventh time at the con, but this year was a big change for me. I crossed over onto the sausage-making side of the convention by taking over the writing track with fellow author Significant Otter. Despite having done similar things for other events before, I was a bit extra nervous as my SO and I headed down to the hotel on Thursday. Of course, I told myself that we'd already done the hard part. The writing track had been sent in with 14 panels with Bond-themed puns for titles. They covered a wide range of categories from getting your first story published to genres like fantasy and sci-fi to introducing the Regional Anthropomorphic Writers Retreat, RAR, and of course the always popular After Dark erotic writing panels. I had panelists from my local write group, as well as Husketeer, TJ Mind, and Mog Moogle, who came in for the con. Unfortunately, one expected panelist got ill the Wednesday before the con and couldn't make it, so we had to quickly do some rearranging to cover for them while they recovered. Mog in particular stepped up, and we all made sure things went smoothly from there. Thursday was check-in day, first picking up TJ from the airport, getting settled in the room, then the Day Zero staff meeting for me before dinner and badge/swag pickup. I actually had two sets of swag to pick up since I had registered at God level before officially joining staff. In keeping with the spy theme, the gifts included two pens with all sorts of extra functions like screwdrivers, flashlights, laser pointers, and a hidden USB thumb drive, a messenger bag, an umbrella, and a drink shaker and martini glass. Then it was hanging out until bedtime. That's actually a really cool themed God level pack. I like that.
Yeah, that is fun.
Friday started with breakfast and getting those members of our group that were local and commuting or had forgotten to pre-register badges. I had actually won a sponsor raffle to be one of the PSA posters this year, so I was reminding everyone to wear their badges. I think I saw that show up on Twitter. We made our first visit to check out the dealer's den and then did lunch while opening ceremonies took place. We came back to the first of the writing panels, and I was confronted with a conundrum. As one of the authority figures for the writing track, I didn't want to look like I was hovering around trying to make sure everything went correctly, but I also wanted to hear what people had to say. What was I to do? As the first panels got going, inspiration struck. On the fly, I came up with a drinking game for the writing track and dropped the rules in the Telegram chat we'd set up to socialize in. Some rules included take a shot for a shout-out to Asketeer or if the Furry Writers Guild was mentioned, or down your drink for a, quote, not really a question, but more of a comment, or, quote, audience member thinks they are on the panel, among others. This kept me and the rest of the group amused for the rest of the con, even if we mostly did shots of water, coffee, or soda, drink responsibly, kids. The day went on like this until the first panel I was actually on, AD Erotica, which had an audience of one person. I was curious and somewhat perturbed by this, as AD panels are usually the most well-attended of the con. We found out the next day from fellow writer and con vice chair Sparf that we had been scheduled against a new Friday dance, and several other events had also seen very low attendance because of it. Despite this, we were able to keep ourselves amused on the panel and until bedtime. Saturday was similar, watching panels, hanging out with fellow writers, jokingly keeping up with the drinking game. The highlights of the day for me had to be hanging out with Ash, the editor for Planet's Fang Anthology, who had returned to Furthermore after several years away. Probably my favorite panel of the con was our version of the Anthrocon Submit and Publish panel, this time featuring Ask, Husketeer, and TJ. This panel is always amusing since it gives a peek at the editing publication side of writing. Also hilarious from that day was the first panel of the morning, which we jokingly replaced a panelist who was indisposed with my plush dragon, and members of our group using the Telegram to interrogate him from the marketplace. Sunday was more panels, including me on writing fantasy, more hanging out with writers, and more checking out the rest of the con. From the marketplace, I bought several prints, commissioned a badge, and stopped by the Rabbit Valley table for books. Since the Rabbits had a few copies of Fang 8 for sale, TJ and I decided to leave a little gift for buyers and signed them. Then it was time for closing ceremonies. The con grew again to a total of 1,487 attendees with 319 fursuiters. The con raised $7,000 for the charity, Frisky's Wildlife Sanctuary, the nice round number being a result of a closing ceremony donation to make a nice round number, which that totally happens, and that's cool. This was our last year at the Sheraton, as the con will be moving to the Crystal City Hyatt Regency next year for Furthermore 8, boldly going forward on March 6th through 8th. So that'll be March 6th through 8th, 2020. It is the Tuesday after the con as I write this, so I'm still processing my feelings on the con as a whole. I had a really good time hanging out with all my writer friends, and I felt the writing track went well. I was impressed with how well all the panels, minus that one surprise with erotica, were attended. Almost all of them had between 6 to 10 people, not counting members of the pack of writers acting as support in Peanut Gallery. And no one hated me by the end of the con, and they mentioned looking forward to next year, so I guess I didn't mess things up too badly. I hope not, as we've already begun planning for next year. In the end, it was a good con. I'm grateful to all my friends who helped out, especially Mog for taking on extra panels, and Husketeer, who was so cheerful and willing to hop in wherever we could use her help. I'm very much looking forward to doing it again next year. Signing off for now, JD. Cool. Thank you very much for writing in with that. I've actually, that's a con I've kind of wanted to do. It's a bit too far away for us to haul all our stuff out there as dealers, but like I know a lot of writers go to it, and I'd like to just hang out with writers for a weekend sometime, and
that could be entertaining.
Yeah, so yeah, it's one of those cons that like I might do one year as like a I'm just going to go to a con because I want to go to a con kind of thing, which I try to do occasionally, just to sort of enjoy being at a con and having dinner with friends and stuff like that, and not necessarily doing the whole shebang. But yeah, so that's very good. Maybe I'll make it out there one year.
Ooh. Okay, and one more thing, just as a note, Patreon on the Patreon front is insisting that Patreon demands more money. That is, the vulture class of investors is demanding more money.
Yep.
And basically, if you don't set up and launch your Patreon by, let me see,
About May. Yeah.
You will be put into the higher class, basically where they're taking 8% of your money and not just 5%, for no difference at all. They demand more money despite being profitable because these vultures, these parasites at the top, demand more money on their investments.
Yeah.
And they're doing it to mess with what was already a nice system for everybody involved.
Yeah, I mean, Patreon, they came up with a good idea. It was working. They got investment to grow. They're making a profit. And their users were pretty happy. And their, not shareholders, but their investors were like, no, we want to see X percentage growth instead of whatever their profit was this year. So, of course, they got to make that happen somehow.
Yeah, and so it's May 1st. You have to launch your Patreon before then.
Because originally they were saying if you set it up, you know, you could reserve your spot at the current tier. But then someone actually asked somebody at Patreon, and it came back that no, you actually have to launch a Patreon before May. Yeah. In order to be locked in at the lower tiers.
And it's not even a lower tier. It's exactly as it is now.
It's the current tier, yeah.
And then
so I'd say
like,
go ahead and launch a Patreon. And, like, if people want to give you money, great. But, you know, if you're not ready to, like, dedicate your whole thing to running a Patreon now, at least you've got it for the future. And knowing venture capitalists, I totally know that staying at the 5% thing, that's not going to last forever anyway.
And they're introducing a higher tier where they take even more of your money, a minimum of $300 a month to do something.
Yeah.
It's like, do you want us to be a manager for you? What are you going to do? We're going to take minimum $300 a month, though.
Yeah, they said that doesn't make sense for anyone making less than $2,500 a month on Patreon. But like last podcast on the left, which last I checked was making like 80 something grand a month, but they actually have employees to help manage their Patreon and their social media and their website and their podcast feeds and stuff like that. So like, sure, they would totally qualify to be at that higher level, but they've been on Patreon for years, and they've literally hired people whose jobs it is
to run their Patreon,
to manage their shit for them. So why would they do that, you know? Because then you're taking jobs away from people on their team and giving more money to Patreon.
Because some rich asshole needs a fifth gold-plated yacht.
Yeah.
So that's just a PSA. I'm sure lots of artists have already seen this, But, you know, in the odd case you hadn't, there you go. Investigate this, and if you haven't set up a Patreon, you can do that. See, the thing about Patreon is it's nice, recurrent, people don't worry about it too much. With artists I follow, I get a nice little drip of porn. Like, there have been some other artists I've been really tempted to sign up for, but, like, I should really sign up with my own Patreon account, not the podcast one. Just because, like, oh, you guys are donating, but then all the money is also... We also support this other stuff. It's like, maybe I should split this off.
So people had suggested to me in the past that I set up a Patreon for the publishing company.
Yeah.
And I've looked on there, and there are other small presses that are on Patreon. So I actually am setting one up for the publishing company. It's not specifically under the For Planet name. I'm going to go ahead and launch it just so that at least temporarily I'm locked in. I have no idea what I'm going to put on it, and I'm not really expecting anybody to go out of their way to support it, but I just want to go ahead and get it branded and launched before this
I could set up one change for my Twitch channel.
Yeah, so the address is patreon.com/argyll, A-R-G-Y-L-L. There's nothing on it yet. I literally set it up today, but I'll get that launched, and that'll be... So I'll do it under the Argyll name, but I've also got in the profile the We're For Planet and Bad Dog Books as well.
Or I could just set up a Ko-fi.
So, yeah, you could do that for your Twitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was nice. A couple folks had a small raid and had like 7-8 people watching me bash my head against Baba Is You last night.
I don't know what that is.
It is a incredibly complex puzzle game with a very simple rule set that you can then modify as long as you don't break the rules. I'll show you a bit here after we're done. So
okay,
we should probably wrap this up for now because we're now past an hour and a half on the raw recording. This will be shorter because there's like a weird gap where we're trying to Google something in the middle that you won't hear, but we're going to wrap it up here. And I'm going to go home and edit this down because this is going to be the last show before Furry Fiesta because next Thursday it's all going to be set up. So you will not hear from us until after Fiesta, and hopefully we all survive sans crud and Shiva will be able to join us again to tell us about her adventures as the vendor lead. You can find us, the podcast, at patreon.com/southpawscast. You can find us on Twitter at southpawscast. You can find us on Telegram. We got a fan chat. I can put the link in the show notes. You can find me, Saverin, at Saverin Drake on Twitter. You can find me at Saverin at snoutsnotonline on Mastodon. I tweet occasionally. You can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/Saverin. Been more or less sticking to my 4 nights a week streaming schedule, playing various things, side troller games, but this puzzle game, like Baba Is You, just like, oh my god, you needed some really galaxy brain shit to figure that out. So that's where you can find me. Fuzz, give them your deets.
Okay, so I actually wanted to throw out a couple of things right quick. So of course, For Planet will be dealing at Furry Fiesta, as you would expect. We do have some new releases. I'm going to go ahead and list off a couple of the things here. We have a new novella by Mary Loud and Garrett Marco. It takes place in the Otters in Space universe. It is called Jove Deadly's Lunar Detective Agency. It is about Jove Deadly, who is a hound, and his assistant, who is an otter. And it is basically detective stories in space. It has two stories in it. One is written by Mary Loud. The other is written by Garrett Marco. And it has a pretty cute cover by Idis. So that'll be available. We also have the first art book by the artist Bravo, which is called... I am trying to remember the title. Basically, if you like chubby characters, like Chubbs and Dilfs, you know, dads I like to fuck, and that kind of it's all that kind of artwork. It's full of pinups and sketches and con badges. Bravo is a neat artist. He's on Twitter. You should totally follow him. I don't remember his Twitter handle right now. I think it's Bravo Arts. It might be, or maybe I'm mixing that up with someone else. But so I have that. Also, if you're familiar with Scappo's series of Backtrack art books, we will have the 6th Backtrack art book coming out, which has a pretty sweet lesbian comic in it, and of course pinups, and it also has a story in it by Alp Sarsis, someone that Scapo works with. He actually wrote a story in one of the previous volumes, too. Also, if you follow Kadath's work, Volume 2 of The Pleasure Principle, starring Olivia, his Oryx character, who is promiscuous and fun and omnisexual and into all kinds of kinky stuff. Volume 2 of that will be coming out, and that's a full-color comic. I really like this one because it has spanking in it. It's pretty hot, so you should totally check that out. And also, Atomic Boy X, he's also known as Kumada. He's done a lot of comics in the past, like he did the Frat House Blues series of comics. We've done two art books with him before. We're releasing his third art book at this con. So if you're into like the Bara Japanese style of art, you know, usually kind of big beefy guys, that style of artwork. So if you're at all familiar with his work, you'll want to check that out also. And I am sure I'm forgetting something in the mad panic to get everything uploaded and such, but that's what I can remember right now. So we'll go with that. So visit us at the Fur Planet table in the dealer's room, where our table something 17, I think it's like E17. We're right next to Rukus, so we should be easy to find. So that'll be cool. You can find me on Twitter at Fuzzwolf. I have Twitter accounts at Fur Planet and at Bad Dog Books. If you want to find any of our book-related stuff, furplanet.com. Buy books. Buy books online. Buy books at con. Buy books. Just buy books. Buy comics. Read.
Support fat. Your furry
fat
economy. Yay. Yes.
Support the furry economy. It's an interesting economy.
Yes.
Yes.
Powered by dicks.
It is. Yeah. But only about 50%, because probably at least half of our really good artists are women.
The consumption of dicks and boobs and
vaginas.
And sometimes people that have dicks and boobs at the same time. It's great.
We actually don't have any consumption of dicks. We haven't published a cock war.
No. Hey, we're not going to go there. All right? Just let's not.
So okay.
We're going to wrap this up. Good night.
And buy books.